Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Twelve. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. Okay. One should adopt the direct process for attaining the Supreme. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is by gradual development, and the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. When one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, then to the stage of understanding the super soul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one may take either the step-by-step process or the direct. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right, so in any case, you're giving up the fruits of action, right, for this indirect. Because you'll be acting in such a way that something to do with whatever you're involved with has to be given up, right? You're working, you're and giving the fruits of that in charity, doing good work. You're renouncing. Meditation means you're renouncing, right? Like that, or you know, so any of these kind of elements. So we see is the first ones are devotionally, you're directly immediately surrendering, following the rules, or at least doing some activity for Krishna. Right? Then there is giving in charity, being a Mayavadi, being a yogi. You know, these are there, but better than those is still the one who is doing pious work. Does that make sense?
When it says that the indirect process is not possible for everyone, is it because of too heavy conditioning or?
Yeah, just attachment, that's all. They're not ready, they're not inspired, so then they won't do it.
So it's basically because they don't see the value. It's not because they're
trying. There's some other, maybe even they could appreciate it as a value, but they can't involve themselves in it. It's like you go sometimes to people's, pious people's houses, and they appreciate what we're doing, but they can't really get involved, right? Because they're doing so many things. And even if they give you something, okay, they've given, so that's there. But you'll see is that they'll give you, 10,000 rupees, but they're giving lakhs and lakhs away to other, charitable institutions. So it's just they only feel that that's a real, real value.
Well, that's ignorance.
Yeah. It's also interesting is that knowledge is because there you know something about it. Mm. But then meditation means then having known something, you're absorbed in it. Mm. Right? And then being absorbed in it, then you're performing activity. Mm. Right? So we see that there's this gradual. That's why we'll say knowledge is the best, but actually better than knowledge is applying it mentally. Right? And then the next would be applying it dynamically. So you're always going to, it's always going to go up. Because the point is, if you're dealing with a relationship, you don't know anything, you can't act properly within it. Right? And if you're absorbed in it, then things will go better. The better yet is when you're actually doing something. Let's see what Eric is saying.
Like earthquake.
Yes.
How many Kung Fu kids can you fit in the Gurukul?
Yeah. It's one of those.
Very interesting.
It's one of those, what do you call it? I don't know why, because that's why that path is there, so they don't bother. There's always that idea that this way is, you know, 3 meters shorter, so you're going to shave those nanoseconds off of, you know, such important work. Do we see here? So we see is that there's all these things have their different levels, right? Mm-hmm. Means you have some knowledge, means you have knowledge of the field. But knowledge of how the field's working is then higher, subtler. Right? You're performing an activity giving the results, but you're performing the activity to please the Lord first, then that will be better. Right? So one will be, does that make sense? Like the Sakama Karma Yogi, and then the Nishkam. Right? So it's higher like that. And we see when there's full surrender, then again they're acting. You know, so it appears that the activities of karma are going on, but it's starting with Krishna, not starting with Naishkarmya or Sakam. Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like meditation, is that the meditation is seen as at a lower level because one is only meditating, one's not acting. You know, like someone in Santaras, they meditate on, they're absorbed in, but they're not acting. So therefore, it's not as good, right? But if it's that they're so absorbed and always engaged in activity, and then on top of that, so they're within that, then they're always absorbed in thinking of. Does that make sense? Then that's better. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if something is being performed not in connection to Krishna and in connection to Krishna, then connection to Krishna is real. The not, that's useless no matter what it is. Then within its connection to Krishna, what's being based on the pleasure of Krishna, then that's always superior. And if it's ourselves connecting, just connecting to Krishna, then that would be the junior. You know what I'm saying? So you get both sides of it. Does that make sense?
Nishkam, when not connected to Krishna, is Nishkam always better?
Nishkam.
Then, I mean, because it would seem.
It means it will always be better, but the point is it's better means it's better than worse.
But
it's kind of like it was better when it was worse.
No, but I'm thinking it's dependent on who you're actually performing the work for. If it's Hitler on acid, or.
So it means Hitler on acid has the munchies and you're preparing a sandwich for him or something like that. But
or he says,
you're not going to get any
get
of the sandwich. You're not going to get me the... You're not going to get any benefit from the sandwich other than the continuance of your head on your shoulders.
Yes, maybe.
You know what I'm saying? If you're doing something for yourself that's selfish, that's never as good as doing something that's selfless.
Yeah.
Right? But there's levels of selflessness.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there's the principle. Okay, you're just following orders, but that means you accept authority. So that principle, you're respecting authority. So that's good. But the problem is there's also quality of authority. So the quality of authority you chose to follow wasn't very good. So that means by association you're going to take on some of that result. Right? So since you had to serve somebody, you respect authority, you're going to serve authority, then choose an authority that is worth following. Does that make sense? So the direct method is devotional service, right? So therefore we just surrender to Krishna. 622. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. The process of yoga should be followed in connection to the Lord. By practice of yoga, one becomes gradually detached from material concepts. This is the primary characteristic of the yoga principle. And after this, one becomes situated in trance, or samadhi, which means the yogi realizes the supersoul through transcendental mind and intelligence, without any of the misgivings of identifying the self with the supersoul. So detachment is his primary point. Right? So that therefore the element of the naishkarmya. Does that make sense? So that's why it's always there. Because you detach yourself from the material energy through naishkarmya. Does that make sense? That's how you elevate yourself. Because you go in the direction of liberation through naishkarmya. You go away from liberation by sakamya.
So a mother who is performing naishkarmya work for her baby is actually sakam because the baby is part of her extended sense of
yeah, but I'm saying, but you'll see in the way of relationship and affection, then it'll be higher than others because there's more sacrifice. What I'm saying? Like that. You understand? So you have to know what you're looking at, because you put in no, but it's that's another thing. But we're talking about the cultural quality here. Like we were saying before, of authority or respect or cleanliness. So that's always better. Because those are Krishna's qualities. But the problem is that they're using them for themselves. So in other words, a superior quality, that's better than an inferior quality. But still, there's how you apply it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. That's why the element of the goal always comes in. So the naishkarmya means that's giving up the result, but for who? Right? So that element is elevating. It's always elevating. But does that make sense? Yoga practice is more or less based on the principles of the Patanjali system. Some unauthorized commentators try to identify the individual soul with the supersoul, and the monists think this to be liberation. But they do not understand the real purpose of the Patanjali yoga system. There is an acceptance of transcendental pleasure in the Patanjali system, but the monists do not accept this transcendental pleasure out of fear of jeopardizing the theory of oneness, right? So that's why it's fear. Right? It's classified as fear. Right? So attachment, fear, and anger. So the impersonalism is fear. Because you're afraid of, breaking down the element of oneness. How do you experience oneness if there's two? Right? So they're afraid of this. What does that mean?
And karmis, that's anger?
No, Buddhists.
Buddhists, no.
That's it. Yeah. His void. So technically the Mayavadis are anger.
Yeah.
Like that. But it has, some angers, some fear, right? But it's, the anger that comes after not getting what you want. So now you've tried to become happy by Brahmananda. That doesn't work. So then you become angry. Right? Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur will get into that next year. Then he says, when all that doesn't work, then the tendency is to go towards these personal religious process. You know, so you just kind of go around in circles. The duality of knowledge and the knower is not accepted by the non-dualist. But in this verse, transcendental pleasure, realized through transcendental senses, is accepted. Because if you're going to be true monism, they have to drop the idea of pleasure, technically. Though they always talk about Brahmananda, you know. You'll be really happy when there's no happiness. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. And this is corroborated by Patanjali Muni, the famous exponent of the yoga system. The great sage declares in his Yoga Sutras 334, Purusharta Shunyanam Gunanam Prasava Kaivalyam Sarupa Pratishta Vachiti Shaktir Iti. This chit shakti, this chiti shakti, or internal potency, is transcendental. Purushartha means material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, the attempt to become one with the Supreme. This, quote-unquote, oneness with the Supreme is called kaivalyam by the monist. But according to Patanjali, this kaivalyam is an internal or transcendental potency, by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, the state of affairs is called Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila 20:12. Or clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. This clearance is actually liberation, or bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Right, so when the mind is cleared, then one is liberated, right? Because conditioned means the mind is covered. Liberated means the mind's not covered. You're in your constitutional condition. The theory of nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds to this principle. Right, it corresponds to this, but they're thinking of it that nirvana means without qualities, you know, completely void. But here it's actually with qualities. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:10:6, this is called Sarupena Vyavastiti. The Bhagavad Gita also confirms this situation in this verse. Okay, so that's being in the swoop. Right? One's liberated in one's natural position as servant of Krishna. So that's there. Lesson 10. Real knowledge of salvation is described in Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12. Then we have a footnote. This is opposed to the indirect and troublesome process followed by the impersonalist. The personalist discussed in lesson 9, verse 12:5. In his commentary to 12:5, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains why the devotional process described in 13:8-12 is superior. Those whose minds are engaged in intense meditation on the Jivatma, which is very subtle in form, endure greater difficulties. Even though the devotees also endure difficulty in withdrawing the senses from objects other than me and engaging in various angas of bhakti, they do not experience the same suffering because of the dazzling attraction of my blissful form. How has this great suffering, which is difficult to remove, arisen? The mind, the mind concentration on the invisible Atma becomes difficult for those who think they are their bodies. The living entities residing in the bodies have been thinking that they are their bodies for a long period of time. How can they suddenly cultivate thoughts of being a small conscious spark? The concept that they have until now completely rejected. Let's just keep going. No. Right? Because the soul is supposed to have a body, but unfortunately not the covered one. Right? So therefore it's natural to think in that way. But because they've been associated with the material energy for so long, then to think that I'm separate from the body, that's very difficult. Because in the spiritual world you don't have to think I'm separate from the body. Right? Because it's just the natural manifestation of the soul, mood of the soul. But in the material world, then it is separate. So then that's a real difficulty to think like that. So it's much easier to understand your life but engage in devotional activities. Right? Rather than depend upon your I'm not this body, I'm the soul, and that's all you have in your process.
For one impersonalist, what is the definition of the mind?
For the worthless. It would be material energy. But they don't understand that there's spiritual mind. Because unless there's spiritual mind, how do you appreciate Brahmananda? Like that. But somehow or another they don't worry about that. What to do? 13:8-12. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with wife, children, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So that's knowledge. Mm-hmm. Other than this is ignorance. So, John, if you ask what's knowledge, people aren't going to give this as your list. Because none of these they teach.
Yeah.
So.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So then nobody teaches this. So then, therefore, it's not seen. Because right? One is. If one has knowledge, the first thing is humility. That's the symptom of knowledge. Right? This process of knowledge is not interaction of the field of activity, but it is the means to transcend the field. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge as described here is the means to get out of it. Right, so it's not just the field interacting with itself, you know, or moving with the field. It's how you get out of the field. Right? But the nice thing about devotional service, still, the humility is used as the process to get out, but it's also the process of culture. Right? So devotional service fulfills all the needs. That's the point. The other ones will just deal with dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. But devotional service will deal with all of them. So that's its superior position. Of all the processes described above, the most important is taking up the devotional service by approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Of all the descriptions of the processes of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mai chan, chanaya, mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service to the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. Right? It means, you know, like anything, if it's not connected to the Lord, then it's not really of any value. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you're in prison with a bunch of other prisoners. So the one that's nicer, okay, that's better than the one who's not nice. But they're all prisoners. So there's no particular value. But if one takes the devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarver gunais tatra samasate sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Right? So any other path than this is ignorance. So being nice, being good, being wealthy, being practical, you know, not being fanatic, Prabhu, all this is ignorance. The beginning of knowledge is humility. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Absolute, the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. This process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Now on this staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second, or the third floor. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is understanding of Krishna, he is at a lower stage of knowledge. If anyone wants, right? So your lowest, okay, somebody's on the third floor, and somebody's on the first floor. So yes, your knowledge is higher than the guy on the first floor. But you know, you're on the, you know, 124th, right? So it's a bit different. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. And so that rules out now all the, you know, how you say, impersonalists. You know. Mm-hmm. It means the Mayavadis, the Brahmavadis, you know, the Karmis. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of material nature, he still thinks, I am God, because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is manitva, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. So therefore, only Krishna consciousness can be counted as knowledge. So either you have the knowledge but not these qualities, then still that knowledge, its effect will be ignorance. And you may have these qualities without knowledge, right? But then still, again, they're going to be a problem.
Can we have humility without having knowledge?
Can we have humility without knowledge? Well, why would we be humble? Right? It doesn't mean that we're cowering in the corner because we're afraid something will go wrong like that. You know, that's not called humility. Right? That's called submission or, you know, weakness or some other aspect. Does that make sense? Yes, so humility means it's based on knowledge. You actually realize your position. So
it's always in connection with the nature of the soul.
Always in connection with the nature of the soul. Yeah, I mean, in reality, it means it also, but it has the element of knowledge. Someone who actually has knowledge understands how much there is and how much they don't know. You know, so then there's a humility. But the point is that will only be effective and permanent if that is everything seen in connection. The knowledge is a connection with the Lord.
Yes.
Right? Because then that humility, that will be real. The other one is just, you know, the present manifestation of the modes.
Yes.
So, either the living entity is subordinate to the Lord or subordinate to the material nature. There's no such thing as insubordination. Right? You can only act like you are, but you still are under the control of the external energy. Priti, the sign of humility is devotional service. Lesson 11. Everyone, be one a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or even less than a Shudra, must cooperate in the transcendental loving service of Godhead. As you can see, Krishna is so kind. He's including us in the Bhagavad Gita here, right? Because otherwise, generally, we would only notice those four. We've also got to mention. For 1846. Wow, I was going to say 1486. Okay. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings, and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. One should perform his duties in connection to the Lord. Everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. And by the result of the work in which one is engaged, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, should be worshipped. Right? He's engaged because it's the Lord's order. Right? You have that nature. This is the work you do. Right? And then, right? Then the result of that work, then that's engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So we're doing our occupation because of Krishna's direction. And we're giving the result to Krishna. If one always thinks in this way in full Krishna consciousness, then by the grace of the Lord he becomes fully aware of everything. Right? So one always thinks in this way. So it's constant. And in full Krishna consciousness. Because full would mean Krishna as a person. Not Krishna just as Brahman or Paramatma.
That's pure devotional service.
Yeah, be pure devotional. And then by the grace of the Lord, he becomes fully aware of everything. That is the perfection of life. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 12:7, Tesham aham samudharta. The Supreme Lord himself takes charge of delivering such a devotee. That is the highest perfection of life. In whatever occupation one may be engaged, if he serves the Supreme Lord, he will achieve the highest perfection. So everybody can be involved. No one is left out. That's the idea. Because otherwise, before we were discussing, you had to be quite qualified to take up yon. So it doesn't include everybody. You know, like that. But anybody who cooperates with the service of the Lord. So whatever your situation, you're engaging in the Lord's service, then you can be elevated. 1847. It's better to engage in one's own occupation, even though it may be one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Right? Because something that you're authorized to do, it doesn't carry any reactions to it. Sinful reactions. It means it'll carry whatever is the reaction of your consciousness, but it doesn't carry any sinful reactions. But if you're doing a duty that's not yours, it'll carry a sinful reaction because you're not supposed to be doing it. Even if you do it nicely, you're still not supposed to be doing it. Everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired. Every man should work for the purpose of Yajna or for Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause for bondage. The conclusion is that everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired. And he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. Right, so get here. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. So that means anything done that's naishkarya, that will free you from bondage. Right? So the point is therefore the naishkarya should be directed at the Lord. Then you get eternal benefit. Right? If it's just naishkarya, you can get liberation. But it's temporary. But if the naishkarya is directed at the Lord, then you get permanently situated on the transcendental platform. Huh? 1848. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. When one performs his duties in connection to the Lord, all defects are purified. Right? So defect may be there, but it's purified because of its connection with the Lord. One should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupational duty in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, then when connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and that is self-realization. So the activity is being done to please the Lord, right? So there may be a disturbing element. There's always something in what you're doing that you may not like to do, but it's part of the thing that's authorized, so therefore it's done. Right? If one doesn't follow it, then there'll be always a problem. Because it's been, the point is the activity, when it's not in connection with the Lord, then it will give all those material results, right? So that fault will be noted. But if it's done in connection with Krishna, then technically where's the fault? So. 1849. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain, by practice of renunciation, the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. The highest perfect stage, right? So it means, you know, you can say the perfect stage of freedom from reaction, but this is highest perfect stage. Right? So liberation is the highest, or the perfect stage of freedom. But this is the highest perfect stage of freedom. Performance of the occupational duties in connection with the Lord is real renunciation. Real renunciation means that one should always think himself part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore think he has no right to enjoy the results of his work. Since he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the results of his work must be enjoyed by the Supreme Lord. This is actually Krishna consciousness. The person acting in Krishna consciousness is really a sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life. By such a mentality, one is satisfied because he is actually acting for the Lord. Thus, he is not attached to anything material. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. So I mentioned here, there's transcendental happiness. He doesn't take pleasure in anything, you know, besides the transcendental happiness that comes from performance of service. Right? So otherwise, we'll say he doesn't take pleasure in anything, so therefore we should always do things that make us miserable. No, but it says one is happy in Krishna consciousness. But you have to get used to being happy by not doing it for yourself. That's the practice. Otherwise, the tendency is one always does things for oneself, so that's always the problem.
It's just like when Daruka, the chariot driver, he cursed the ecstasy that he was experiencing from driving Krishna around. You don't want to go beyond what you do.
No, it's not that. There was just the ecstatic symptoms we're getting. He's not having a problem with the happiness. It's just the ecstatic symptoms cause the sattvika bhavas. So the sattvika bhavas, then, you know, you're either crying so you can't see, or hairs, you know, how you say, the
loss of consciousness.
Yeah, that one definitely. You can't drive a chariot if you're in that case. Stunned. You know, you can't move. You know, so all these will get in the way of his doing his particular service at the time. So it's not that, you know, you get more than. Krishna's unlimited, so the amount of happiness there is unlimited. That's just the way it works. That's the scene. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's not that there's some other element. Does that make sense? Means we have to get used to that Krishna consciousness is happy. Because we have a tendency is, okay, material world's not meant for happiness, though I think there is and I'm trying to get. So then spiritual means I'm not trying to get it. Happiness means there is none. And I should be satisfied with that. But that's just coming from, you know, that's how spirituality is defined on the material platform. You know? Right? Because if there's no personal endeavor, right? Since he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the results of his work must be enjoyed by the Supreme. This is actually Krishna consciousness, right? So that's the point. So, okay, we'll give that up. We accept that. But we see after that, the person acting in Krishna consciousness is a real sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life. So this is sannyas. Right? But then he goes, by such a mentality, one is satisfied because he's actually acting for the Supreme. So the satisfaction. It's a satisfaction, you know, it's a lasting position of experience of happiness. Thus, he is not attached to anything material. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. Right? So, it's supposed to be like this, therefore surrender. But one will, by practice, get accustomed to being happy when one sees the Lord happy. So that happiness is a transcendental happiness. So that's beyond the material. Because the material is not shared. Right? The spiritual is. You know?
You're saying that the impersonal, the immature concept is that it's a negation of the misery.
Yeah, it's a negation of the misery, but it's also means that spiritual means we're not engaged in anything material, which is true. But then they take that means you're not engaged in anything, because they don't know about spiritual activity. Right? So by not knowing spiritual activity, then there is always their idea is that there's no activity. That's the mistake. So that's what I was saying here. The performance of the occupational duties in connection with the Lord is real renunciation. So that means performing the duties within the Varnashram system to please the Lord, that's actual renunciation. Right? Not that one has to be a sannyasi. So whatever your duties are, you perform those. right? But doing it for Krishna, the results are for Krishna, that's sannyas. You know, so if you haven't caught that before the end of your life, then the sannyas ashram is supposed to give you practice in that in the external. Right? But the idea is to appreciate that before you get to that stage. Right? O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage. Right, so one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage. Can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting in the way I shall now summarize. Summary of the process of self-realization. The Lord describes for Arjuna how one can achieve the highest perfectional stage simply by being engaged in his occupational duty, performing that duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One attains the supreme stage of Brahman simply by renouncing the result of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. That is the process of self-realization. So that you've renounced it for the Lord, that gives you liberation, right? Situation in the bottom. That you've done it to please Krishna, then that gets you prema. That makes sense. So in other words, the activity of renunciation and having performed that renunciation for Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Right? In other words, the process is that renunciation, but the goal that you want is Krishna's pleasure. Because if you do the activity for yourself, it means you follow the same process, but you get the result for yourself. But here is that while you're doing the process, there's no desire for the result for yourself. So, does that make sense? Lesson 12. So that's the process of self-realization. Right? Simply by engaging his occupational duty, right? Of that, or the result is for the Lord. Right? We get it? We understand? We're renouncing it, so it's for the Lord. That will get us liberation. But doing it to please Krishna, that gets you devotion. Lesson 12. Salvation is not obtained simply by dry speculative adventures, but only by the service of the Lord. It's interesting. Dry speculative adventures. Yeah. 14:22-24. O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion, when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, he was situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable. Such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Footnote. These verses describe the symptoms of a sthita pragya, one above the modes of nature. The characteristics to be recognized within oneself are described in verse 22. The external characteristics visible by others are described in verses 23-24. So within oneself does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion. Right? How they, when they come and they go.
Illumination, is that knowledge?
Yeah, I would think so. Okay. One attains salvation by being conscious of Krishna. When a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, It is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. And when one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material bodies in the body will act. But as spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. That's why Upadeshamrita will start with the six pushings. Because that's what the body will do. The body gets hungry, the body gets tired, the body, you know, all these different things. So that's those are just, they come and go, you don't worry about it.
Talking is also the body.
No, it's just a need, you know, of the gross and subtle bodies. Right? But because we identify with it, therefore we become happy or distressed, depending upon it. One does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material modes in the body will act, but as a spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Thus transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. He doesn't have to try to become free from the influence. He simply has to absorb himself in Krishna consciousness. Then he'll be free. Right?
It's a consequence to become to be free of the mode of material nature. If they absorb in Krishna, the consequence is to be his freedom.
The consequence is his freedom.
It's freedom from the gunas.
Yes, he's freedom from the gunas. But the body will still act according to the gunas, because that's the body's made of material energy. Material energy is controlled by the three modes. So the body will still act. It'll still get hungry. It's not that pure devotee's body doesn't get hungry or tired or have to go to the bathroom. That'll still go on. But he's not disturbed by it. You know, if you're hungry, if there's something available, you eat. Not available, you don't eat. You know, he's not worried either way.
Nice.
Yes. So whether the bucket is full or the bucket is empty, one is not worried. Or you mean when the bucket's full, whether you're eating it or whether you're too full to eat it, you're not disturbed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Such a devotee sees everything with an equal eye. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he has no necessity of anything material, either a stone or gold. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. If it's favorable, he accepts it. If it's not favorable, he doesn't need it. Right? In other words, he's looking at it from the angle of his service. Right? The service is there, then it goes nicely. If it's not there, he doesn't worry about it. He takes everyone as his dear friend, who helps him in his execution of Krishna consciousness. And he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level, because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with material existence. Social and political issues do not affect him, because he knows the situation of temporary upheavals and disturbances. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self, he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated. And so again, just it's for Krishna, not for oneself. That endeavor, then, you know, he becomes transcendental. Lesson 13. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is just like the sun. Therefore, one is at once liberated from the nescience of matter as soon as he surrenders to Sri Krishna. So as soon as you surrender, you're liberated. Like that. So one can take it that the devotee is on the liberated platform. Whoever surrendered is on the liberated platform. Now, when he is fully conscious of that surrender, then he'll be fully conscious of what that liberation means. Does that make sense? Right. Lesson 13. Okay. 10:10. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. If one is sincere and devoted, he will attain the Lord. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But if he is still not intelligent enough to make process, then Krishna from within gives him instructions, so he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person, you know, without difficulty means they'll progress spiritually. It doesn't mean that there won't be material difficulty, because that's controlled by the modes of nature. Right? And that's from the previous verse where he says he's not going to be disturbed. The qualification is that a person always engages himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of service. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. It means that they want to serve Krishna, want to do it, but they don't really know how to do it nicely. But Krishna will give the intelligence with time. He will give. So one should maintain that sincerity. You know, one may feel one doesn't know, one may be unqualified, but still one continues, because Krishna will give the results. Ten 11. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. The Lord helps his devotees to attain him. The Mayavadi philosophers think that without discriminating one cannot have pure knowledge. For them this answer is given by the Supreme Lord. Those who are engaged in pure devotional service, even though they may be without sufficient education, and even without sufficient knowledge of the Vedic principles, are still helped by the Supreme God, as stated in this word. So that means if any devotee is sincere, then whether he knows so many things or not, still Krishna will help him, he'll advance. Right? Difficulty comes as if the distraction is so great that the focus on Krishna is not so much. Right? Then that'll be more difficult, because you don't want Krishna. Yeah. See, it's one thing you want, but you know, aren't very expert at following the process to get. Right? Because devotional service is based on the desire. But if one doesn't have that desire, right, and is not very expert, then what's going to carry things through? Right? Therefore, safety net is the association of devotees. So hopefully in that association, one gets inspired.
So it's very important to develop, to keep enthusiasm.
Keep enthusiasm, yes. But that's by the standard thing would be by knowledge. You have that enthusiasm, because enthusiasm comes after knowledge. You have that understanding, right? So therefore, you're enthusiastic because you see here's the field, this is the result, and this would be the method, so you can understand, so you become inspired.
Right? What role does the association of devotees play in enthusiasm?
Endeavor with intelligence. One, you see them making endeavor, and two is by their association one, you know, gains knowledge, one gains intelligence. So by following their instructions, then that gives knowledge. So it's the devotion that's most important. Then things like knowledge and ability, those will come along with it. But the focus is not, okay, yeah, you got to do this because you got to get knowledge. And without knowledge, you can't know. It's without devotion. These other things are just simply showing the hierarchy within. Okay, if you have the knowledge, then this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. That's just showing the progression there. But what drives that is the devotion. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have the car, right? So what drives the car?
The engine.
Okay? Like that. And so then one will focus this engine, and there's all these different things, and then the tires, and so you have to get all that there, because from the engine, then, you know, it gets to the ground, and then you have all the different whatever it is like this. Okay? No? Right? We're comfortable with that. But what happens if there's no petrol? But in a sense, then the engine doesn't work. So that's the point, is without that devotional attitude, these whole processes of karma, jnana, and yoga don't work. Right? That they're the mechanics. Right? But the mechanics are only working because of the devotion to the Lord. Is that it? The Lord tells Arjuna that basically there is no possibility of understanding the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, simply by speculating. For the Supreme Truth is so great that it is not possible to understand Him or to achieve Him simply by making a mental effort. Right? He has to reveal Himself. Man could go on speculating for several millions of years, and if he is not devoted, he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth. Oh, if he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth, he will never understand Krishna or the Supreme Truth. Only by devotional service is the Supreme Truth, Krishna, pleased. And by his inconceivable potent energy, he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart. And with the presence of Krishna, who is just like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is what is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee of Krishna. So the Lord's in the heart, so He can easily dissipate the darkness of ignorance. But you have to want that. Otherwise, if you're attached to the darkness of ignorance, then He reciprocates with you through that medium of darkness of ignorance. Does that make sense? Because you're covered, so you think you are the darkness of ignorance. And so you're attracted to darkness of ignorance. Right? But the potency behind that darkness of ignorance is Krishna. Right? So when you want to have that relationship with Krishna, right, then it works very nicely, because then the what is the occupation, what is the situation, that's simply used as the medium. Otherwise, then you don't see yourself as the soul, you see yourself as the body. And you don't see that the Lord has entered everything, that's why it has attraction. So you think the dead matter itself is what's attractive. So your dead matter is the body, is interacting with the material energy. Right? Under the modes of nature. But if you don't act in that way, then one's not under the modes, so the soul is interacting with God.
Sounds better.
Yeah, sounds better. Definitely sounds better. So this is special must rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. Riti, out of his causeless mercy, the Lord desires to award the soul the greatest boon in the form of pure devotional service. One should reciprocate with the Lord with the same pure intention, guided solely by the desire to please Him by rendering devotional service. Right, so the Lord gives pure devotional service, but then one should reciprocate by rendering that service. Right? Does that make sense? One could say, oh, he's been given devotional service, but you have to use it.
Yes.
So like someone gives you money, you have to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could say, I'm rich, but but what are you doing with it? Lesson 14. One should not desire to cooperate with Godhead conditionally for some material gain. Right? Because before it says, human beings should cooperate with Godhead. Right, so that means on any level you're cooperating with the Lord, following His laws. But of all the cooperation, you shouldn't be doing it for some material gain. Right. So in other words, you've accepted that connecting everything to the Lord is good, but you may be doing that because it's His world, and so if He's pleased, then you'll get what you want. Does that make sense?
Is that technically cooperating with Him?
Means ultimately no, but the point is at least you're appreciating and following His laws. So that is a cooperation. Right? So that's why human beings follow the Vedic system, because that's a cooperation. But, you know, that's what we see. Why does it end with those persons, you know, before was saying? You know, do pious work, you know, then you can't do that, then knowledge, but better than knowledge is meditation, better than renunciation of work. But all of them are pious. It doesn't drop out of that. Right? Because pious means you're following God's laws. Impious means you're not following God's laws. Does that make sense? Yeah. 17:20. Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Right? Charity should be given without any consideration of return. That means not that they'll give you the money back, but you'll get something from it.
You know? Okay.
Yeah, I've given them so much money, you know, nobody cares, and this and that. So that's not good. You know, it means the culture is there. Someone's given, you know, one's grateful, all these things. But the point is one expects something. So that's for yourself, because you can't control how the other person is going to feel. Right? You can control what you feel. Right? And anyway, if they're not grateful, why give to them in the first place? So if it wasn't obvious, now you know.
That's what you got.
Yeah. But never expect anything in return. In the Vedic literature, charity given to a person engaged in spiritual activities is recommended. There is no recommendation for giving charity indiscriminately. Spiritual perfection is always a consideration. Therefore, charity is recommended to be given at a place of pilgrimage and at lunar or solar eclipses, or at the end of the month, or to a qualified Brahmin or Vaishnava, devotee, or in temples. Such charity should be given without any consideration of return. Right, so these are the recommendations how it's done. Is that what I'm saying? Right, so the more qualified the person, that's the recommendation. Right? It's not recommended to give to someone who's not qualified. You know, I'm saying you give something, people need it, they're hungry, you give some food or like that. That's okay, but that's general welfare work. But the real charity should be what's given to a qualified person. Because that you get lasting benefits. But what these other, then how much benefit it takes you get from feeding a starving person is how much you'll get back.
Hmm.
Right? You gave one chapati, you'll get back one chapati.
The obligation that the student feels for the teacher, is that considered also in the realm of charity? Is that different?
It's the same principle, but it's different. It's dakshin, because something's been done, so you're reciprocating that. The other, generally charity is not they've done something for you. Right? It's just they're qualified. It's your duty to give part of your, you know, accumulated wealth to someone who's qualified. Right? Does that make sense? So I mean, same principle, but the details. Here you've gained, so now you should, because it's not done beforehand. Because if it's given beforehand, then there may be the consideration that, you know, I've given, so therefore that's, they have to deal with me how I think. You know what I'm saying? Rather than what I deserve. You know?
According to how much you
gained, I mean, it's always what activity, what service has been rendered, the qualification of the individual. All these are to be considered. You know, someone does, let's say a anaprasana. Okay, so that, you know, it's something, but it's not that big. But a marriage, that's big. So the daksha you could give for a marriage should be more than you would for an anaprasana. You know what I'm saying? And then if it's just a devotee who knows how to do it, you know, then that's, you know, they're qualified, then that's good. You give one level of charity. But if someone who's highly qualified, you know, or very spiritually developed or like that, then you would give more, even though it's the same activity. You know, it's not that, oh, last time I gave this much, so this time I give. No, it depends on the individual. You know, the individual, your circumstance, how much you have. You have a lot, you give more. You don't have a lot, you give whatever, you know, whatever works. Is that right? So when they've done some activity for you that you've benefited from, then you're giving dakshin. Right? If you're giving something so that they can do beneficial things, then that's charity. And you give money, then they preach. But if they come to your house and did a program, then what you give there, that's dakshin.
My wife mentioned that when you're on the train or in public and there's a performer, and if you appreciate what their performance, then you're obligated to give. And some of the beggars coming through, or somebody singing bhajans.
I mean, on one level, I mean, if that's what they're doing it for, then, you know, you can always give them something. But that's also according to their qualification. If they're humble and properly behaved, you give more. If they're not, you give less. You know, they come up and poke you and touch you and pull it like that, then, you know, you're not necessarily obligated to give them anything. You know, because that's not their business. They have no right to come up and touch you. You know, they can't invade your personal space.
Does that exist in India? Personal space?
Yeah, it's just a little bit closer than probably.
After all, they're wrong people. Yeah,
probably the greatest I've seen is probably Sweden. That's got the greatest personal space.
Denmark is the same.
It means one house here, and the ideal is 1 kilometer away is the next house.
Ideal, yeah.
Half kilometer is okay.
It can work.
Yeah, but and the corners of the house are white or red or.
Not marked in Denmark, at least.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
In
Sweden. Then the corners. You got the carving in the corners, so that's always painted. Can't remember if it was red or white or something.
Usually red.
Probably
red. Red. Okay, Sweden is red. So Denmark is no specific.
No, no.
Okay, so main thing is just the space.
Yeah, and as big a hedge as possible around your whatever land you have.
Oh, okay, yeah. Moats?
Yeah, we have toxic products for those.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, sometimes some situations are provoking very strong sentiments, like someone is begging or something's happening. And
yeah, so you give something, but you give according to their qualification.
And what is the main thing for the devotees? Because everybody usually knows many things, but because of these sentiments, people lose the discriminate in particular situations, or what's the main thing to remember, so to be able to assess properly the situation and.
But what is the situation?
Well, something which is confusing, unexpectedly you witness something which is generating this.
But you still have to. The point is that it's been generated, fine. You want to give something, fine, but then you have to use your intelligence as what would be appropriate.
Yeah.
So, right? Because otherwise we're coming up. We're coming up to it. Just okay. Wait. 1721. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruit of results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. Now, you don't really want to give it, but you know you're supposed to give it, you know, because there's loss, right? You know, just like you're supposed to do it, but you're looking at what gain you'll get. Here you're supposed to do it, but you're looking at what loss. So that's charity in the mode of passion. Right. Charity with desire for remuneration is not recommended. Charity is sometimes performed for elevation to the heavenly kingdom, and sometimes with great trouble and with repentance afterwards. Why have I spent so much in this way? Charity is also sometimes given under some obligation, at the request of a superior. These kinds of charity are said to be given in the mode of passion. There are many charitable foundations which offer their gifts to institutions where sense gratification goes on. Such charities are not recommended in the Vedic scripture. Only charity in the mode of goodness is recommended. Right? That's why it says to a worthy person. So he's saying here is, they're giving means the point is you want some return, or you're giving only because you're supposed to, but you don't really want to. Not because they told you to give because you're supposed to, and oh, you're happy to give. You know, you may not have thought of it. This is where you don't really want to give. So that's all mode of passion. Or afterwards, you feel bad that I spent so much like that. And then these charitable foundations may give their, you know, their money to people who are not actually qualified, right? So then this is all passion. 1722. And charity performed with at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Contributions for indulgence in intoxication and gambling are not encouraged here. That sort of contribution is in the mode of ignorance. Such charity is not beneficial. Rather, sinful persons are encouraged. Similarly, if a person gives charity to a suitable person, but without respect and without attention, that sort of charity is also said to be in the mode of darkness. Right? So you may have a qualified person, it's the right time, everything, but you do it without attention or respect. You know, you're so either so distracted you just give and go off, or you know, some other way you don't respect them and that, but you're supposed to give like that. So that'll all be mode of ignorance. Riti. Even when one approaches the Lord for material gain, the Lord mercifully reciprocates with him by purifying his desires. Okay, we're at the end here. And now on the last page of this section. Maybe you can mention to Pandava Bandava that we're probably not going to make it till Thursday. We thought, okay, Thursday will have the next bit ready, but probably tomorrow we'll have to have it ready.
Unless some heavy issues come up.
Yeah, I mean, this could be two days worth of discussion. Of course, right here. Just
have until tomorrow to meditate on some political question.
Oh, okay, yeah. Look at this and see if it's an issue in mind. Otherwise, then he'll have to come up with a few more pages.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaurav Prema ki.